Welcome to the Men of 8 Gang podcast for Saturday, September 19th, 2009. I'm Steve Borsch. I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Hey, good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
And our buddy Graham is out fooling around in San Diego, California. He's getting ready for demo fall 09 down in San Diego. So he's got that place out in San Clemente, and he's out there, I suppose, surfing.
What I got a kick out of was his tweet yesterday. Why is it so crowded at the San Diego airport? Demo doesn't start for 3 days. I'm thinking, you know, it's the weekend at San Diego. I don't know, Graham. Maybe there's some people there other than demo.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there are a couple of reasons why people might go there.
There's just a few.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so a bunch of stuff happened this past week. We got events coming up and all kinds of things. I've decided that... Like Ted Kaczynski, I'm moving to a cabin up in northern Minnesota, shutting everything off and getting off the grid.
And writing a manifesto.
And writing a manifesto. I usually do when I write emails, but...
and blog posts.
And blog posts, yes. I have in fact been accused, although people have said, you know, when I'm done reading it, I don't have any questions. It's just I can't really read it because it's too long.
And I've celebrated a birthday, so...
That's right. That's right. All right. So I just have to start off. I had kind of a bug this morning. I'm reading the Star Tribune, and I know I sent you guys this link, but I wanted to send an article through Twitter. I just wanted to tweet about it. So I had to go through six steps. I had to copy the URL. I had to launch Bitly, you know, paste the thing in, copy it out, click the shorten button, copy the Bitly shortened URL, launch TweetDeck on my iPhone, write the tweet and paste in the URL. And I was comparing and contrasting that to another traditional media outlet, WCCO, who has an iPhone app, and how all I have to do is click share, choose how I want to send it, email, text, Twitter, Facebook, enter my credentials and send it. Boom, it's done.
And how long did that take you?
Well, the first adventure took me 4 or 5 minutes. And the second one with WCCO takes moments. I mean, it's, you know, 30 seconds.
So Steve, I kind of at one level get what you're saying, but at the same time, they do have share links on the Star Tribune. You know, you could, for instance, you could use the email share link that's on each article and send it to your posterous, which is, you know, a one step kind of a thing.
Yeah, that's true.
Now, it would be good to add, besides Delicious, Facebook, and Dig that they have also on every article, you know, more services, and Twitter would be the most obvious one, I would think.
Yeah.
And if you go to the Pioneer Press site, you'll notice that they've incorporated the Add This, which is what I use as well, which is a little bookmarking thing which gives you access to just everybody. So if you go to Julio's latest article here, you can share it on Facebook and Dig and Twitter and Front Feed and MySpace Delicious and a whole number of other services. So they make it easier just by using Add This.
Yep.
Yeah. So I think the issue, you know, obviously the quick fix is, hey, you know, Star Tribune, add Twitter. That I understand, but you know, at the same time, if I look over at WCCO, and you made a comment in your post, your very short post, as a matter of fact, in a quick read post about.
Thanks.
Well, I mean, you got I got what you were saying.
It's on Postgres, though, so it should be short.
Right, yes. That's the point. Yep.
As WCCO doesn't share their video. Well, wait a minute. That's what they make their living doing. They shoot video.
Yep.
But they don't share their video. That seems to be a bigger crime to me. A crime. That's a hard word. That's the bigger shortcoming than I think, you know, the Star Tribune forgetting to put a Twitter share button. You know,
I would agree with that, except for the fact that even if WCCO shared the videos for embedding, which it sounds like they're trying to figure out how to do. He wouldn't really say a whole lot, John Danzer, about what, you know, they're discussing and so on. But even if they were to do that.
What they're discussing is do they want to give up the ability to control their video, you know, and where it's used and where it's seen. I mean, that's exactly what the only reason they're concerned. They don't want people going to any other site than WCCO to look at their video. That is their sticky.
Right.
Yeah, that's the only thing they're discussing. And that's going to come down to, you know, how can we participate socially and still keep our revenue stream alive? So.
Well, the one thing I wanted to mention, though, is that even if they did allow video embedding, if they didn't allow MP4 embedding, then I couldn't watch the videos anyway on my iPhone, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't be able to pull them up. So that's the one thing, is not only do they have to embed, but they've got to be able to make the videos themselves mobile friendly.
Well, I find it kind of interesting because last night here in Lakeville was the big North-South rivalry game, the high school rivalry.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And they, you know, WCCO chose it as their sports rally of the week. So Frank was down there along with our sponsor, Golden Plump.
Did they have a chicken?
Video stuff. Yeah, they had the big chicken.
Yeah. Okay.
I was standing at the gate. My son is in the North High Band. And I was standing at the gate with my flip video camera to get video of the band coming in. And as I'm standing there, Frank comes up to me and he shoves a card in my hand. Hey, if you get something good, send it to us.
Oh, you know? Interesting.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, great, Frank. I don't know if you really want pictures of my kid in the band, but it was interesting. I mean, I was a little concerned because he didn't bother to introduce himself. He didn't bother to say, hi, how you doing? You know, he said, if you get something with that thing, send it to us.
Yeah, as though we should be really happy to be able to give free content to
it. Yeah, and so I'm thinking to myself now, yeah. And I read your article this morning, they don't share our video or their video, but they want us to share our video.
Well,
interesting concept.
Good point.
Interesting concept.
All right, so you guys, let's just switch topics here. At the Minnesota Cup, the grand prize winner was a new idea, a company called Alvenda.
Alvenda.
And they basically, I mean, in a nutshell, what they're offering is a 300 by 250 display ad sized e-commerce in a widget they call theirs a shoplet.
Which I think is a great idea.
It is a great idea. Well, and one of the things that I love about it, I think I might have mentioned on the last podcast, is not only is the e-commerce at the customer touch point where they are most likely to actually look at something. But PayPal started this as a beta with a PayPal in a widget, and they still haven't done anything with it. But I thought how unbelievably great that would be to allow the transaction to occur without popping up a bunch of other windows to, you know, enter this and do that and so on and so forth. Everything is just right there.
Well, what I found really interesting is through one of their early customers, 1-800-Flowers, they've actually put this application right on their Facebook page. So they've got basically an e-commerce shop and a widget on their Facebook page right now.
Interesting.
Which I think is a really great idea. You know, I just ordered flowers from 1-800-Flowers for my mom not too long ago, and it was, you know, click on the link, go to the site, open the site, you know, do the whole thing. You know, when I'm wondering about, you know, the ability for them to take something like that and either share it via an email or you know, something like that. But it was, I kind of tested the little shoplet, and I found it quite easy to use.
Well, and
it's like an e-commerce shop, and
yeah.
I think this is kind of the future of e-commerce on the web, is to embed it in all the different social services that we use.
Well, I would agree, and I will tell you, I know I've said this before, but e-commerce is the most fundamentally broken suite of technologies that exists. It is so unbelievably hard. You either have the option to throw a PayPal button on your blog or website, and that's cheesy. I mean, it's like having an AOL.com address for your consulting or business, or if you're an attorney. And this could potentially do even more than just advertisement-based e-commerce. I mean, why not say, you know, have an embeddable shop, small business, and embed it on a web page or embed it on a blog page, and have everything, all the transaction occurring within that embeddable object.
Yeah, no, I'm looking at adding a shop to one of my sites now, and you know, there's a number of options, and something like this, if it's very simple to do, would be kind of just a no-brainer, because you just don't want to add a lot of complexity to an already complex system.
Right. Well, what would you think? I mean, Tim, in the wine business, for instance, what if there was an opportunity to, you know, essentially, if you're a distributor, to be able to create a shop that would be able to distribute multiple wineries' products?
You know. Yeah, I think that would be an interesting model. I think that, you know, the way that the wine distribution system is set up today in the U.S., there may be some problems with doing that. So
legal ones?
Well, partially. There's just some legacy of the way that the business models are set up, that distributors tend to be a wholesale-only kind of a business, and they sell to retailers and restaurants. And you don't see retail distributors setting up these multiple brand e-commerce shops. So that's presented an opportunity for new entrants, and there's, you know, a whole host of people that's what they're doing. And they're, you know, developing technology to be able to facilitate that. So, you know, I think that something like an Alvenda can really help a company that wants to do that sort of thing. And, you know, there are regulations and things that you have to attend to as well, which make it a little bit more complex. But at the same time, you know, making it easier to deploy an e-commerce shop and making it easier for a consumer to actually interact with it, so that you can interact with the shop where you already are, like on Facebook as an example, I think is just a brilliant idea.
Mm-hmm.
And is where we're headed. I think that they've definitely they have a lead here, and it'll be interesting to see what their competitors do and how they react to this.
In winning the Minnesota Cup, they score some dough for that, don't they? I mean, how much money do they get to use towards their startup now?
Well, they got $40,000. They got $20,000 yeah. grand for winning their division, and then another $20,000 for the grand prize.
Not bad at all.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and of course, then all the buzz and people talking about them and so on. I'm going to try to find time here. I can't next week, but the week after, to go down and interview these guys and really get into a little more about their value proposition. Because it's, I mean, when you start to think about, I mean, everybody immediately wants to go to the affiliate model like Amazon, where, every blog, you know, millions of blogs will be selling books, and we'll give them a little piece of the action. That's interesting, no question, especially in a B2C play. But what's more interesting is being able to segment your market and look at who are the thought leaders in those various segments that have websites or have blogs or are somehow, you know, thought leading their particular segment of the space, and go to those and have separate offerings, and, you know, be able to do testing of offerings and all of those things, but kind of behind the scenes. I think these guys have a lot of upside in terms of the sorts of things they can offer. I mean, just imagine landing pages, you know, doing a campaign and having a landing page and having, some commerce offering right there that you can actually do the transaction on that page and measure the results immediately. I think it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the whole real-time web thing is you know, being there at the point where the customer's paying attention is really key. And in fact, you know, to that end, Tim, you had been saying some things about Twitter's terms of service and the sorts of things that they, some of the changes that they just made.
Yeah, a couple things I thought were interesting is one is they made it very explicit that you know, that the users own the content. So we own what we put on the service, and I know a lot of people were concerned about that they would somehow take ownership over the content that you produce. So that's a really positive development. But also they are looking at how to try to control some of the problems that have gotten worse, and it seems like these things have gotten worse very quickly, which are people squatting on Twitter presences, not really doing anything with them, and trying, I guess, to sell them or trade them. So they're kind of cracking down on that, as well as on spam. But on the spam side, they've made it somewhat vague, where they're saying that, you know, if your updates are mostly links and not personal updates, then they can shut you down, which is kind of funny because many of the tweets that I send out are links.
Yeah, exactly.
Most of them are.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I'm not trying to spam anybody. I just like to share interesting links. So I think they're going to have to make that a little bit more clear, so that, you know, that if you're just sharing links, high-value links, that's not a violation of the terms of service.
Well, and especially because I follow, I mean, I love it when you do that. You just had one about a little pocket stand for your mobile phone. That's why I follow people like Tim O'Reilly. I mean, the guy constantly puts in excellent links of really high value in almost every tweet.
Yeah, and that's not spam at all. So,
No. But
Twitter spam is a big problem, and it's good to see that they're doing something about it. And I also like that their terms of service aren't written in like a formal legal kind of context, so you can actually, real people can actually understand what they're saying.
You can actually understand. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's written in real English. That's another thing that's great. I don't know when the whole spam at reply thing started, but it's like half the time I'll go up and I'll see what people are replying to, and there'll be these out of context, really weird, you know, make $1 million doing nothing sort of
right,
deal.
Right.
And it's like, well, when did that start? It seems like it's just something that just kind of cropped up.
So probably under these new terms of service, I shouldn't release that new ebook, No Money Down Real Estate.
Yeah, well,
is that what you're saying?
I would say go ahead and release it, but
that's probably more honest than some of the stuff I've seen.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding.
At least.
Yeah.
I did find out I had won in the lottery by a tweet, so that was great.
Oh, really?
Oh, sweet.
No, I'm just kidding.
Hey, Phil, did you have an opportunity to go down to that U of M new media event?
Yeah, it was very interesting. You know, when you and I chatted yesterday morning, I thought I'd head down and see what was going on at the U of M. And it was you know, we did the Emerging Digerati last year, and this was not the Emerging Digerati. This was really kind of a networking event for the U to showcase what the folks were doing as far as research in new media there. And so it was more of a showcase for people just to come in and see what are the services that are available, everything from focus group rooms to eye tracking, to all sorts of research tools that are available via the U. I'll go ahead and put a post up on it at Minovate here in the next day or two. So once I collect all my thoughts, but it was really very interesting. The things that are being explored there are quite interesting. A lot of it has to do with education, but not all of it.
Just out of curiosity, was the journalism school represented there?
Yes, the journalism school was represented.
Or were they the ones that were driving it?
They were. I think that they were part of driving the whole thing. But it was a very interesting event. And I'm sorry, I'm going to grab my notes from it. They've announced a new media research network that people can be a part of that lets you share the things that you're researching and that sort of a thing. And you know, they discuss things, everything from social media to video game and virtual worlds and things like that. And the research that they're doing in those areas. It was really very interesting.
Be nice so, if they offered some of that stuff. I mean, they'd make it more public.
Actually, you know, I asked one of the leaders of the event, and I'm sorry, I'm blanking on her name right now. Let me, if I can get to my notes, I can be a little bit better prepared for it. I apologize for that. But, you know, I spoke with, who did I speak with? Nora Paul, who was leading up the conference. And Nora was very helpful in saying that, yeah, these things are really available to non-campus people as well. Now, I think my gut would tell me that there's probably a little bit of a criteria that you would have to meet if you wanted to use their facilities. But she seemed very anxious to have people of all levels of interest, you know, use the services.
Huh.
It was very, very fun. I enjoyed it, and it was a good lunch. And she and I were both lamenting how it would be nice to see more people attending. There was a good crowd. You remember last year, the Emerging Digerati was a little bit sparse in attendance.
Right. Yeah, it was.
This was better attended than that. And obviously people that were very interested in finding out what the university offered, but it would be really nice to see more people aware of some of the things that they're doing at the U and be, you know, more involved.
Well, there's just so much energy down there. I mean,
there really is.
It's just, you know, it's great to see some of the things that are emerging out of the U. But it gets really interesting when you actually have an opportunity to be in, you know, student-centric functions, and you realize not only do they totally get it, but they're connected to other universities throughout the system, and they work with one another. And that, I think, is where a lot of this cutting edge thought leadership that is beginning to gel at the U is accelerating, because they're connected with one another. That's one of the things that there's a digital resource center at Walter Library, and I've gone to some of the events. Admittedly, some of them are way over my head, and I when I was at Lawson, I dragged Doug Olson, you know, who's now the GM for the Microsoft group here, down to one of these on wireless technologies, and you know, they'd like fly in some professor from Carnegie Mellon who's leading authority on some, you know, fill in the blank dweebazarb, and so they're clearly sharing with one another, and the people in the audience were, you know, doctoral level students and professors and people within the university system. And then Doug and I, and maybe a couple of other hanger-ons, but,
yearning to be youthful again.
Well, yeah. 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 And to be smart and well-educated. Right. But, that's one of the things that has been a little bit frustrating, which is nice to see, like at the Minnesota Cup, that the University of Carleton School is so behind what's happening with the Minnesota Cup, because there's such a wealth of knowledge that exists at the U that I know a lot of us would like to just simply tap into. I'd love to know what's happening in social anthropology relative to looking at crowdsourcing and the participation culture and everything that's happening at, you know, on the web. I'd like to know what, you know, the law school is looking at relative to copyright law, you know, things like that. I mean, it would be great to have an ongoing series of, you know, community education, out of the U, because there is a lot there.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, what I walked away from the event was, you know, I tend to be one of those people that looks a lot, it's very easy for us to get caught up in, the buzz around social media, and I'm one of those guys that always wants to know, well, how much of this is bullshit and how much of this is really, you know, really going to impact somebody's lives. And there are tools available to at least the university campus and the community at large to actually find out what is BS and what is not. So it'll be I'm anxious to talk with Nora Moore and you know, see if I can actually do a few things with the Institute of New Media Studies. It'll be kind of interesting.
Oh yeah, keep us up to date on that, because
yeah, it'll be great.
That'd be great. Hey, Tim, you mentioned something, and I've kind of looked at it very, very briefly as a toe dipped in the water of making Facebook more public. But you mentioned something about Facebook Lite. Can you just say what that is and what you think of it?
Yeah, no, Facebook is on their march to become more like Twitter, I guess. And they what they've done is they've taken the essentials of the service and they've boiled it down into a very lightweight version called Facebook Lite, like the beer, L-I-T-E, which is at lite.facebook.com. And basically it's a slimmed down version of your wall, information, friends, and your photos and video feeds. And I find it very handy. It's very fast. It's easier to look at. There's a lot fewer ads on it at this point. I'm sure that will change as advertisers start to use this. But
right
now, it's just it's a super fast way to check your Facebook status and post stuff. And I find myself using that more than the traditional service since I access Facebook through the web. So with you know, with mobile internet devices, things like an iPhone, which Steve, have you tried to access this on an iPhone?
No, in fact, but I'm holding mine right now in the
browser.
Facebook.
And I'm wondering how this in mobile Safari compares with the dedicated Facebook app.
Well, that's interesting because I'm actually looking at the dedicated Facebook app and it's not available there, which. I mean, I just didn't know if it was even there. So I can take a quick look here. But it's clear that, I mean, this is a, you know, I think a pretty smart move on their part to get more involved in the real-time web.
Yeah, absolutely. And it just extends it to yet another way to easily interact with the service, which is, you know, they're just making themselves more sticky, I think.
Yeah.
What's interesting is these pages, I mean, this is like 25% smaller than the traditional service if you compare your profile page feed to this.
It's a lot less noisy, there's no question.
Yeah.
As well, so that's interesting. Well, I'm not going to futz with the iPhone right now. I'll look at it a little bit later, but... Let's end with looking at some of the upcoming events that are going to be happening and just talk about those real briefly. This coming week, Graham and I are going to be, I'm going to do it on the 23rd, and then he's going to join me on the 24th when he's back from San Diego, the Rainmaker Conference, which is it's primarily for angel investors. And they've got a full conference schedule, and Minovate's the media partner. We're going to go down. We're going to have be doing interviews down there, and you know, doing some maybe some live blogging. Graham and I are still going back and forth on that. But I mean, everything from valuation and the patent landscape to doing some new company showcase stuff. And this is obviously out of Rainmaker's portfolio. But it's going to be really interesting. I'm going down there and try to be as much of a blank slate as I can to get a sense of really what's happening within angel investment and how willing people are and how eager they are to accelerate their funding of new startup companies and what areas are they focused on. Because that's what I've always done in the past when a headhunter has called me or I've had an opportunity to chat with a VC that I know. I always ask them, so what's hot? You know, what's you know, top of mind right now? Because it really does give you a sense of where people are willing to put their money. So that should be a good one. Demo Fall, Graham is live blogging that, and he's got a Scribble Live page, and I'll put that in the show notes. Phil, talk about MEMA Summit. So we're going to be the media partner for the MEMA Summit.
Yep, we're the media partner for MEMA Summit. We posted our first the first interview with Lee Oden that we're doing with them, and they're definitely a little bit of a sort of ad or a little tease for the MEMA Summit. But I've worked very hard at making sure that we have a lot of content in those videos. You should be seeing the next one coming up here from Jennifer Wiesenmeyer about analytics. That should probably come out to you this week. So look for that. And then we'll have one more interview with Doug Rosen at Carlson Marketing about mobile. So,
really?
And then of course the MEMA Summit comes up on the 5th of October. We'll be there.
Yep. And then Visy's got their Cloud Vision 2009 event.
Yep, we'll be at that. That should be interesting.
Yep, and that all this stuff, we'll put this in the show notes.
I get a kick out of the whole concept of cloud computing. You know, this everything's up in the cloud, when in actuality, it's in a data storage site somewhere in, you know, the outskirts of Milwaukee. I find that interesting.
Yeah. You know what's hard, though, is I just got done building and launching a new site for someone that has started a consulting business, and she was adamant about using Outlook like she's been doing it before. So she wanted to set up a POP3 account, and even though she didn't call it that because she didn't know what the POP3 was. But anyway, I ended up ultimately evangelizing her doing this in Gmail, and here are the reasons why. And once I did that and sort of pointed out what it was and the fact that it was in the cloud and she could access it from anywhere and so on and so forth, it took, 10 minutes and she said, yeah, let's do that. And so the advantages of, I can't tell you, you guys probably do the same thing where you email stuff to yourself through Gmail.
Usually emailing to myself really is pretty much all I ever do. So nobody else emails me.
Thank God you have mirrors in your house and somebody to talk to.
I'm my own best friend.
but seriously, I mean, when you think about, I don't know how active you guys are with this stuff, but with sharing calendars and, I have people sending me Outlook Exchange events, and Google Calendar just handles it, things like that. I mean, have you guys tried the new Microsoft Office Online?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, although they don't have the latest, greatest version, which is what I'm looking for, which is the one where it doesn't depend on the desktop apps to work. Because the current one,
you have to have
the Microsoft desktop app.
Yep.
Because you can store stuff up there. And it looks kind of like Google Apps, but in order to edit anything, you have to have the Microsoft stack. So you click on it, and it actually opens it up in Word, for an example. And then it's connected where after you've finished editing, it saves it back to the online version. So it's handy from that perspective. But they just put out the the pre-alpha technology release of their competitor, and in fact they just did it this week, so I'm waiting to get a invite to that, which looks a lot more interesting, which is basically the apps in the cloud.
But you also use your online storage now, don't you?
Yeah, because they give you 25 gigs for free, so I use just about everybody's free online storage as a backup, and I'm also testing out Carbonite now, which is another service that's unlimited apparently, and it just kind of runs in the background all the time, and backs up your data to the cloud. So that's a for pay service, but it's cheap enough that it may be more convenient.
Yeah.
But I think that what Microsoft's doing is interesting, and they're, they're going to be linking all this stuff together, and at some point, they're going to have a very compelling competitive offering to Google. And because, they may not get it the first time, but by the third or fourth time, they usually get it, and they do have a piece of the market that is, that's looking for them to fill that role.
Well, and you know, not to just knock Google, but you know, most 11-year-olds could design better than what Google has. I mean, I look at these themes and I'm embarrassed for them that they offer these sorts of things. And Microsoft stuff looks much better. And if they can rein themselves in and not put every feature known to humankind into this thing and keep it, you know, relatively mainstream, their stuff looks, I mean, it just looks better and it functions nicely.
Well, Google has always strived to just strip stuff down. So I don't know.
Yeah. It's all about the essence, but, I don't know. It's just, yeah, you know, and then, I mean, they've got the, you know, the whole global network footprint thing going on and still based on what's going on, I don't see why Microsoft, you know, can't just replicate much of that and probably are. But Phil, what are you using for online backup?
I've CrashPlan.
CrashPlan, the local.
Yeah.
Yep. And how are those guys doing?
I switched over from Backblaze because CrashPlan was a local company, and they offer, you know, they offer a solution not only for backing up the cloud, but they also offer, as Tim pointed out, the ability to, you know, back up locally as well. So
right.
Yeah, and I still use CrashPlan as well. I just want to make sure that I have multiple backups. I don't want to get caught like I did get caught a year or two ago, where I lost a couple weeks worth of work. I did have backups, but I didn't have, you know, backups of the last week of work, and that was not good.
Well, I tell you what, I have a beautiful, wonderful Seagate external FireWire drive. It's a FireWire USB, and it just started doing some clicking, and I thought, oh my God.
That's not a good sign.
Clicking is bad.
No. So it's one of those things where, you know, I've done a bad thing, which is I have one extraordinarily important file or directory that's 45 gigs, and it's just on this 750 gig. And so 3 or 4 days ago, I have a 1 terabyte that I'm ripping all my old DV video tapes too, and putting photos on and stuff like that. And I basically took that and backed up that key file. Cause I haven't yet stuck it in an online backup. So I know you guys go ahead, chastise me, but I know I have to do it. That's one of the reasons I was asking, but.
Well, I think that a lot of people will be concerned about putting their data in the cloud. I mean, I remember when I was at WAMNet, you know, a decade ago, that was one of the issues that people had. And I still think that a lot of businesses, they'll want to run the, you know, their own version of it. So that's another place where I think that the Microsoft offering is going to be interesting, because they're going to have their version of Office integrated into the SharePoint service or server, which allows you to run it yourself. So I could have my own SharePoint server running in my house or business, and be able to have my data still in the cloud, but it's my cloud, my personal cloud.
I like that.
Yeah, and of course they're going to offer a hosted version too. So, you know, you can buy it through Microsoft or one of their partners, or you can buy your own server and set it up in your house. So that, I think that's the future, is that if you're paranoid about it, you know, you can run your own, and I think a lot of people will.
I think we should wrap it up, guys. Is there anything just what's one fun thing that you're doing online right now that you're besides maybe surfing inappropriate sites? What's the one fun thing you're doing that you're finding pretty interesting?
Well, it be national or international Talk Like a Pirate Day today, matey.
Oh, it is.
It is.
Arrgh.
And as a matter of fact, that's what all the jokes for Comic Twit will be today.
As we
celebrate International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Okay.
Who's your favorite Beatle? Ringo Starr.
Oh my God. Well, How about you, Tim? Or no, Phil, you didn't say the one fun thing.
The one fun thing I'm doing.
Gotta be comic twit.
Comic twit.
Okay. All right. Well, my one fun thing is playing around with Posterous and really trying to decide how I'm going to use it.
Now, that was interesting that you say that, because Posterous, I saw the fact that they had started offering more customizable themes for Posterous, which I think is always good because you want to keep your brand the same across a lot of your platforms. So I went in there and, you know, I hadn't been on Posterous for quite a while, and I subscribed to your Posterous feed. There didn't seem to be much in it as of yesterday or 2 days ago, but today it's like it's full.
Yeah, I haven't done much for a while. Yeah.
StevNet is like huge.
Well, I'm trying to decide on, I mean, here's the challenge. So I have iconnectdots.com, which I started in 2004 and has, you know, 1,000-some posts. Then I have Minovate. Then I write 4 days a week for Scholastic Administrator for administrators and leaders in K-12 education. Then we have Minovate, all the things going on there. And then now Posterous. So it's like, you know, part of me is this, you know, bipolar, flipping around, ADD, scattered sort of where do I put things? Mm-hmm. And Posterous at least promises the opportunity, if I can kind of get into it, to make decisions on where should stuff go. And you know, because I can post it to Posterous and also have it end up on iConnectDots or end up on Minovate or all three, you know, that sort of thing. So I'm just not sure what I'm going to do with it yet. That's why I haven't been using it every day, for instance.
Well, now, Tim, you talked about International Pirates Day, but what are you doing that's fun?
That's a good question. I don't know. I'm thinking of some new business kinds of opportunities, and that doesn't sound very fun, does it?
Could be.
No, but that leads to money. Money leads to eating, and eating is fun.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, no, I've one of the things that is interesting is through the internet, you can discover a lot of different things, and one of the things that we like to do is watch British television shows. So I've been watching a lot of cooking shows from British television, and it's kind of interesting that although we do have some cable shows that are like somewhat like what they've got over there, they've got such a wealth of different sorts of cooking shows that would never make it here, and I'm not sure exactly why, because I think there's probably as many or more people interested in cooking in the U.S. than in the U.K. But for some reason, this doesn't seem to make it onto television. The Food Network notwithstanding.
Well, all I can say is enjoy it now, because the BBC, like others, want to put a broadcast flag on HD television programming. So it may or may not be available for very long.
Oh, well. Well, eventually it gets over here through BBC America anyway.
Yeah, that's true.
But it takes months and months.
All right, guys. Well, hey, have a great weekend. It's going to be one of the last, I think, fairly warm and dry ones. Because it looks like it's going to be getting a little chilly here in the mid part of the month. Or no, end of the month.
Yep, end of the month.
End of the month. All right.
All right, guys. Thanks, man.
Take care.
Have a great week.
Too.
And talk like a pirate today.
All right. See you later.
See ya.
Have a good one.